So, what I would like to talk about with you is your meeting with a rather interesting person with an interesting company and an interesting concept. First of all, how did you find out about this organization, and have you met the person before?
So I was listening to a podcast. I listen a lot to podcasts, and one I really like is called Tim Ferriss podcast. And one organization, an ONG, sponsored one of those podcasts. And the name of the organization is 80,000 Hours. Like, the purpose of these organizations is to help professionals make decisions toward the problems that we must solve. So because we have a lot of good professionals, I have a lot of competent people that work in useless problems. So these organizations, they make research and do a lot of things. And one of those things is a job board. But they just put on the job board companies that are working on some problems that, according to them, needs attention. And one of these problems is mental health. So I read a lot about those problems. There is a movement called effective altruism. It's very interesting. I never heard about, but it's really interesting, this movement. That's a bunch of people that are trying to make everyone working on meaningful problems. And I found this company in this job, in the job board. I searched about the CEO and I really liked him, like his ideas, his way of thinking. And I met through the organization, but I really fell in love with the ideas of the CEO. Everything makes a lot of sense.
So you're going to meet this person whose name eludes me at the moment, but I'm sure you can tell me. That's right.
It's Spencer.
Spencer Greenberg. Greenberg.
Yes.
Spencer
Yes.
Greenberg. He lives, and the interesting thing is that he lives in New York State, not in Silicon Valley or the New
Yes, I thought it's very interesting as well, because when he talks and what he does, I would guess in the first hand it was Silicon Valley.
Okay, so you're going to talk to him with view of working for him or with him. The preposition is important here.
Yeah, I think it's for him in this case. Yes.
So what do you actually want to know about his organization, his company that you don't already know?
So the story was, I was searching for opportunities. I found the company, and but I found the company 2 weeks ago, and I read about the company. I watched Spencer videos, and I thought, first I will finish a project management certificate that I'm doing, and then I'm gonna apply. Poor mistake, because when I went to apply a few days ago, the job was closed. I didn't find the opportunity anymore in the job board. But I thought I will contact him anyway. So there is a Chrome extension that's called Snovio, like SNOV.io, which helps you to gather emails that are associated with any domain in the internet. So what I did, I went to the website, the sparkwave.tech. And I used the extension, and I sent and I saw Spencer at sparkwave.tech. So I wrote an email telling him that I found the company in this ONG, and I was interested in
Head of
the
operation.
job,
And the chief operating
the
officer.
position. Yes, yeah, the position of he. And he just replied. He was polite, but he replied, "Unfortunately, this place is already taken." And I answered him. I replied, "Oh, okay, that's fine, no problem. But if you can think in some way, I can, with my background, then I listed my background, I can help you. I'm very interested in the purpose of your company." And he answered back, "Oh, what about a chat on Monday?" So that's how we came to talk to each other. And my plan today is like to understand what are the challenges, present myself. It's more like a chat. It's not very formal. And then find how I can contribute and how I can work for him, you know, because I have expertise in many domains, and if I feel I can contribute and he feels I can be valuable asset, that's a beginning of a negotiation maybe.
Okay, so this is not really a formal job interview. This
No.
is more just a fact-finding inquiry to see if what he has and what you offer is in any
Yes.
way compatible with each other, so that you don't waste each other's time
Yes.
moving forward in this process. The reason I'm a little bit curious about all of this is because you sort of need to look at the starting point. So you did your research. You found out
Yes.
about this person, this company, this organization.
I sent him the LinkedIn profile, my
Right.
LinkedIn profile.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
It's
Okay.
quite everything.
Yeah.
It's my
Okay.
CV.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So lesson number one: make sure your LinkedIn profile is up to date,
Yes.
and then you can work from there. Okay. Now, the psychology of this is interesting because normally when people apply for a job, they might be needing a new job or looking for a new job, because they are unhappy with their present situation or something like that. So there is a certain imbalance. The job seeker is looking for a change, and the power lies with the job offerer and not the other way around. Whereas what you have created is a level playing field.
Yes, I did on purpose. I'm a marketer after all.
Okay. So for those in the world who are not as fortunate as you are, and maybe who do not really understand the concept of self-promotion and self-earned mark and self-marketing and own branding, what advice can you give to somebody so that they are on the same level playing field as the job offerer?
Well, I think one of the biggest mistakes people does when they are searching for a job is like they think the company are make them a favor, like, and it's very annoying for the employer because the employer wants someone to add value. They don't want to make a favor. It's not like altruism stuff. Like as an entrepreneur, for example, I want someone to bring value. And if I spot someone who can bring in value, it doesn't matter if it's a job or it's a contract or a service. I want this person with me because I like to say entrepreneurs are very solitary, and when they find someone who can help them and share the same value, they value the opportunity. So that's what I try to do. Not only in this situation, but when I want something in my personal life, when I want to contact someone, I'm really interested in the content. I always try to create value to them. So in this case, when I sent the email, I showed him my LinkedIn profile, and I said I didn't lie, of course. I said I could do some volunteer if he wanted, so he could see my competence. So I created value, you know. I wasn't asking for a favor. That's
Okay.
one mistake people do a lot.
Yeah. Because that now brings me to the second question in this. If I were Mr. Greenberg, why should I hire you? What are you going to do for me?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. So there is a very good book, popular book in business. That's the books say a very makes a very good analogy. As an entrepreneur, you don't. It's more important to have the right people in the bus than know the direction of the bus. It's very powerful, you know. And that's true. When I had my company, and with everyone I relate that has companies, it's more important to have the right people than know exactly what they're gonna do. Because if they are good, if the people are good and share the values of entrepreneurship, it doesn't matter if I'm making a bakery or if I'm making a CrossFit gym, it's gonna work because the right people are on board, you know? So my philosophy, and I think that's something that brought attention for Mr. Greenberg, is that I am someone that can bring value. It doesn't matter what I'm gonna do, I can bring value. So this conversation today, it's getting more specifics on what I can do. But the first message is this, you know, I can bring value because I see meaning. I have a track record. I am very interested in this topic. So that's my line of thought.
So, and of course, it's very interesting that, again, we look at the language. You're not asking him for a job. You're not asking him for a career opportunity. You want to help him.
Exactly. For me, it's very automatic to think like that. If you're gonna put on paper, I'm asking for a job because he's gonna pay me, right? So it's a job. But like in the philosophical sense, it's not because I don't want to get paid just to do anything. Like I want to add value, and this value gonna be priced, gonna have a price. But that's something I always did, and it's always work, you know, especially with entrepreneurs.
Do you want to help Mr. Greenberg personally, or do you want to help his organizations, or do you want to, of course, help yourself? You're a very generous person, in your wanting to help, but who specifically do you want to help?
So I want to help his organization to achieve its goals. So his organizations, what they do, they try to scale mental health solutions. So let's say we have a lot of mental problems in countries that don't have access to psychologists, or even rich countries like the United States, for example, many countries in Europe, that people have access, but they don't have information. So his company do exactly that. Through technology, they find solutions to scale and improve the mental health of the people. So I want to help his organizations to achieve that through my background on marketing and growth, because in the end he's gonna have to spread his message. But something like more people have to know his company
So
to reach
to increase the awareness of his product.
yes.
So you want to have a chat with Mr. Greenberg about possibly looking to become the organization's head of operations.
Yes.
Is this a vacancy that you have found, or is this something that you're just aiming for and hope that it works? Or why this particular job, and what do you expect to do actually in this role?
Well, that's something I'm seeking is specifically because in the startup environment, in technology environment, usually they are very good on making things. Like they make great products, they make great design. It's very common. You have great companies doing this, but it's very hard. And I speak this through my experience to find very scalable systems to reach more people. So those technologies they are created, but they die because there's no one looking to how to reach more people, how to do a very consistent strategy for this. And I would say to create a system where everything is created can reach more people and work. So the head of operations is someone that takes a product that was created for the by the team, and make this product work, whatever we define its work. But let's say we want to reach more countries. The head of operations is the person that connects the product with the people. And in this way, there are a lot of things that happens, but basically that's the role of a head of operations.
Okay.
Because you have to deal with the technology team, with the market team, the growth team, with the CEO, you know, it's like someone that connects with everyone.
Okay. So I want to go back to your analogy of, so you're all sitting in the bus, and the bus is driven by Mr. Greenberg himself. And you said something along the lines that as long as all the passengers in the bus are of the same caliber, the direction isn't really so important. Now you're almost contradicting yourself, because you are the one who is going to advise Mr. Greenberg. You're not going to tell him, you're going to advise him and help him by saying, well, maybe we should go in that direction rather than in that direction. So how does your analogy of the bus and the direction work in this particular instance? And what experience do you have that might prove valuable to Mr. Greenberg?
That's a good point. I think the analogy of the bus is more in a sense of management. So I would rather, as an entrepreneur or a senior manager, being in a position that I have really good people with me and we make a mistake going to the wrong direction, then have like mediocre people or no one at all in a bus going towards the right direction. So it's more in this sense. But as everyone is in the bus, we have to define where we go. After all, we must go somewhere. But it's like it's before we define where to go, we have to have the right people on the bus. The analogies work more in this sense. Because the right people on the bus will decide where to go, you know.
So would you say that one of the major problems in a lot of companies is that there is a lack of entrepreneurs, there's a lack of entrepreneurial thinking? And that you have a lot of people who just look at the bus driver and say, okay, this is where he wants to go. And I'm quite happy sitting here in the back seat doing my thing and getting paid at the end of the month. And then I go home. Would you say that companies lack entrepreneurial thinking in their management and in their rank and file?
Yes, I think, and I think there are a lot of reasons for that. But I like to think that's a management problem. So, like, if I have a company and I have employees that don't have the entrepreneur spirit, like they are not a problem solver, they don't move if you don't tell them to move, this kind of thing, it's a mistake of the management. Or you recruited the wrong people, or you didn't put up incentives right enough. Maybe you did a toxic culture. There are a lot of reasons, but I don't like to blame the people. I like to blame the manager, because we are dealing with humans, and humans are mutable. You can change people, in my opinion.
Do you think that this is also part of the problem that we are currently experiencing on a global level? This great resignation process, that people are leaving certain jobs in droves because they have been badly treated or for whatever reason. Do you think that this is a reason why we have such labor shortages in a lot of industries at the moment?
Yes, I think so. I think like the world changed very fast, and most of the companies, not for incompetence. I think most of the companies, especially big companies, are very competent, but they didn't change fast enough. For example, I see that. Let's use Brazil as example. In Brazil, we have like the government had to start to help people financially. because COVID and the economy is not going well, and the government had to do that. And of course, if you give people money, people will have more choices, and that's part of the game. So the companies didn't look to that. So now they are complaining, oh, of course, people are going out because the government is giving them money. But again, I think it's a problem of the management. I think that the management had to see it and develop other incentives, not only money, because if people work in a place, they don't feel valuable, they don't feel respected. If they stay only because of their money, in any opportunity, they're going to leave. It's obvious. And they are not wrong. I think they are correct. I would do the same, you know.
Okay.
The smart company are learning now and doing things to show the employees that they are valuable, and not only giving them money and expecting them to stay forever.
So transferring this to a possible job as a head of operations, not knowing exactly who your team would be, but you would be in a you would be in a managerial role.
Yes.
But based on your own values and based on your own experience, how would you personally like to be treated as a, not as a manager, but as an ordinary person working in this organization? How would you like to be treated so that you can reflect this to your team that would be working with you for you?
Well, there are two things that I think it's almost unnegotiable. First, we as humans, especially when you are educated person, you must know why you are doing something. You know, like when you are educated, it's not enough to say, "Oh, do that." I don't want to explain you why. Just do that. Do what I'm saying. So that's very nocive, because smart people want to know why they are doing. And as they are smart, if they know why, they can think in better solutions. So the first thing, I would like to know why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I also would like to be evaluated. So the value of my job, should be my results, not anything else that the company think it's makes sense. So let's give example about politics. There are a lot of companies that, all the career planning, it's based on politics because people don't know what they need to do to achieve something. So let's say I'm working for 1 year, for Greenberg, and we stop to measure my work. I would like to be measured on what I achieved, not who I am friend, who I'm not friend, because it makes the way very clear. Something I learned with my company, that's a quite similar environment. It's not only technology, but it's marketing, and there are a lot of technology involved. And that people, to grow in their careers, they must know what to do. If they don't know what to do, they're going to run to politics. So if I don't know that I must double the profit of the company, I will start to think what I must do to be notable, to the management see what I'm doing. And it's make a lot of space to politics. It's never a good thing.
Okay. So that now brings with it a whole nother can of worms. You were in southern Brazil. Mr. Greenberg's organization is in somewhere upstate New York. It's not exactly around the corner.
No.
So there are two options. Either he moves to Curitiba, which I don't think is going to happen. You move to New York State, to the United States, which might be or might not be possible, or you stay in Curitiba and he stays somewhere in New York and you somehow work remotely, which as a head of operations could be quite an interesting prospect because you need to be quite close. So and one of the things that management also doesn't have is trust in its team that when they work remotely, that they actually are productive.
Yes.
So given that maybe you still will be based in outside of the United States, how could Mr. Greenberg measure the results that he wants you to produce?
So that's exactly why we need to define what is expected beforehand. So let's say he wants to double the profit of the company. Doesn't matter if I do that remote or in person, but if we set up this goal and I achieve that or I don't achieve, the measure will be the same, you know? And I think in my experience, when you are remote, it makes things easier because when you are remote as a leader, people are almost required to follow processes. So, and processes are very important to scale things. In my company, everyone was remote. So I had over 20 employees and everyone was remote. And it was very good because people followed the process. So if I do something to a client, as if I don't tell anyone, no one will know because there's no one beside me. So I have to document that in somewhere. So it makes it easier, in my opinion. I think it's difficult when you have a team that you are they are working together in an office and you are remote. If you have a team that are not remote, it makes it very difficult because this team, as any human being, would make more connections with the people who are there in presence, and you would be like taking a side. So it's very challenging. But in a situations when everyone is remote, I think it's quite easier.
And I think there's also another argument for working more remote. Is it actually reduces the amount of politics that goes on because
A lot, yes.
you don't have the photocopier, you don't have the coffee machine, you don't have the canteen where you can get together and discuss company gossip, because all the instruments of that are taken away. So you work, and if you finish the same task in 5 hours rather than in 8 hours, because you spend 3 hours gossiping and playing company politics, those 3 hours are actually your own personal profit in time
Yes,
management. Yeah.
exactly. And like in person, people have a lot of, besides the verbal communications, we have with no verbal communications. When you are working remote, you just have like the information someone give you. So it's very efficient because if I'm working in a bad mood and I want to ask someone to Amanda, and I ask Amanda, please give me this file. And I say in a tone that Amanda doesn't think it's friendly. There are a lot of noise in this communication. In the remote, no. I just want the document. Amanda doesn't know, especially. And I it seems like a joke, but I talked with a lot of women who worked in my company. And something they really loved about working remotely, they didn't have to deal with people when they was in a yes, they were in a bad mood. So they didn't have, because it's easier to women, because of course the natural cycles, the menstruation, things like that, they suffer a lot. And in remote, they don't have this kind of problem. So they really enjoyed it.
There is a flip side to that problem that you may not even have to ask Amanda, because if you have processes in place,
Yes.
then all the documents and every piece of information or data that you need should be centrally stored and
Yes.
you should be able to access it. So Amanda might be having a bad day and you may be seen as being impolite. So Amanda will be very happy to not have to talk to you.
Yes.
Working remotely also reduces the amount of verbal and nonverbal communication, but the positive stuff, because this is also human interaction, is where ideas are generated or spontaneous decisions are made or something happens which is unplannable, unforeseeable, but could have a great impact on whatever is happening. So how do you compensate Amanda's lack of wanting to communicate with you?
Yes, so that's a great question. And I spent many years wondering what were the solutions. And I found out, I think 2 years ago, that like in an operations point of view, not necessarily you want the random communications in an operational point of view. In the operations, like a machine, you want to work as efficient as possible. But when we talk about innovation, remote is a problem because you don't have space to serendipity. You don't have space to random ideas, and it's a problem. So when we talk about innovations, let's say we need a new product. Remote can be a problem. There are forms to fix that. You can meet people. You can gather with all the team. But I agree. I agree. Like when you are thinking about innovations, can be quite a problem. But for operations, no. Operations, very good, in my opinion.
Mm. Okay. So you really have to divide the teams and the works, the work that they do, into categories, so that if you have process-orientated tasks, you need to get a certain criteria of people to follow the processes, and they don't need to be the greatest communicators on this planet. They just have to get the job done.
Yes.
Whereas on the innovation creative side, you may work remotely, but the money that you save in infrastructure, office rent and so on, you can actually then invest in regular meetings in nice exotic locations.
Yes, I think so. I think for the leaders, like the leadership level, we must have opportunities to work in person and to travel together, because 100% remote, you don't have quite good ideas and not fast enough if you are looking for innovate.
Okay, so you've known this company for a little while, and he has produced an enormous amount of material. I mean, he's got, I think, 270,
yes,
is it letters or articles or podcasts?
Yes, I mean, a lot of things.
I thought, oh, you know, when we started discussing, so I'll quickly have a look at this and, you know, form a picture. And then I just kept digging deeper and deeper. And the guy has produced an enormous quantity of information, ideas, and so on. And the question that I would like to know, and maybe you can ask him, how do they do that? How do they find the time to do all of this?
That's a good question.
Well, when you speak with him next, give him my regards. Tell him I've downloaded one of his products. I'm still trying to learn how to use it properly, but the first impressions are positive. But I would also then like to know, where does he find the time? And does he, I think he actually has a time management app on his collection. I don't know.
I think so. Yes, I think so. And one cool thing, I don't know if you noticed it, but all the apps they have, it's all based on research. So like they have a productivity app that's based on research, like a habits changing app that's based on research. And I think it's very cool.
It's actually an interesting concept. So somebody comes along with a piece of programming, and they turn the program, the code, into a company. Yeah.
Yes.
That's a very interesting way of going.
Yes.
And not actually.
And they hire CEOs. So I think I'm going to ask him, but I think he does is like he's very good on having ideas and making good teams. So he make a product, his team make a product, he hire a CEO, and then he come back to produce content. I think that's the strategy, but I must ask him.
Okay. So coming to an end of our conversation, when are you going to meet him? Later today, isn't it?
Yes. It's 7 p.m. here in Brazil.
Okay,
I think
so
it's midnight where you are.
well, yes, it's and I'm not going to be around, but I think that you're on the same time zone as New York,
Yes,
so
yes.
that is good. Well, okay, so I wish you well, and I look forward to hearing the result of this meeting. At least of this, it's not a meeting, it's a chat. Yeah,
Yes,
you just
yes.
yeah, it's sitting down to have a virtual cup of coffee to plan the future of the world together. Yeah.